Empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
Be like water, my friend. The immortal Bruce Lee. We conclude our episode on fraud in the martial arts. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to welcome you, as always, to my White Collar Crime and Fraud podcast. I'm your host, Gene Tausk, and we'll be discussing today part two of two, Fraud in the Martial Arts. I thought I would be able to get two parts in 1 week. Of course, that fell through. As always, pressures of work and other matters precluded that. But hey, I'm getting part two of two in, and it is only the first part of August, so I should get another episode in this month as well. So we will conclude our discussions about fraud in the martial arts. As I said, this is a two-part episode. So if you've listened to, if you haven't listened to the first part, please listen to the first part. It puts things in context. Also, as I mentioned before, I don't like to use profanity in my podcast since I tend to use profanity a lot in my life, but this is just such a subject I feel so passionate about. Sometimes the occasional curse word will slip in. So we're going to spend today's episode examining unique martial artists or people who claim to be martial artists. Obviously, I think there's a lot of, as they say, bullshito in what they claim. And we're going to conclude with what to look for in a martial arts school if you're interested in taking martial arts. So last time when we left, I was beginning to talk about Ashita Kim. Ashita Kim. And Ashita Kim is a person who claims that he is a ninja and has ninja training. And for those of you who lived in the 80s, there's no real need to explain ninjas. They're the supposedly the ultimate type of superheroes, super martial artists. They did exist in feudal Japan. They're basically spies. And they went by another name, shinobi, but that's for If you're interested in that, there's plenty of literature on that subject. Ashita Kim, and as I mentioned in my last podcast, that is not even his real name. His real name is Radford Davis, and he lives somewhere in Florida. During the 80s, as I said, everybody wanted to be a ninja. There were ninjutsu schools that were popping up left and right all over the place. And Ashita Kim, Radford Davis, whatever you want to call him, cashed in on that. Well, I don't know if cashed in is the right word, but he certainly wrote quite a lot of books about ninjutsu and talked about his abilities as a ninja and his so-called secret missions. Back in the 80s and 90s, it went out of business in the 2000s. There was this publishing house that was very famous for publishing all sorts of crazy stuff. And it was called Paladin Press. And they had some pretty good titles, actually. But they also sold just about anything anybody ever wanted to publish. And Ashita Kim would sell books like Secrets of the Ninja, Ninja Mind Control, Ninja Death Touch, Secrets of Invisibility, just all sorts of amazingly bad titles. And these would supposedly teach people how to use secret death touches that would kill people, or how to turn people invisible, just all sorts of nonsense. And this came at a time, as I said, when ninjas were in the movies, in the popular press, and as I said last time, even in role-playing games. If there was ever a time that was ripe for somebody like Ashita Kim to get published, that was the time during the 80s and early 90s. Ashita Kim has a website. I'm not going to give you his website name. You can look it up yourself. He offers all sorts of crazy stuff on there. He claims to have a direct lineage from some Pole society or something. And he's even published a work of fiction. I don't know if you want to call it fiction. He claims it's based on real experiences when he was a super spy for something. I don't know. But I guess what I'm trying to point out here is I don't believe a word Ashita Kim or Radford Davis, whatever the hell he calls himself, I don't believe a word he says. And first of all, I don't speak Japanese. I'm not an expert in Japanese culture or civilization, but there are what I believe to be legitimate schools of traditional martial arts in Japan that can trace their lineage back several hundred years. He has absolutely no proof that he was ever in any of these schools. He said that he was part of the Black Dragon Fighting Society. We talked about the, quote, Black Dragon Fighting Society, unquote, or last episode when we were talking about Count Dante, the infamous comic book martial artist. And needless to say, that's a bunch of crap as well. And if you really want to have some fun, you can actually go to YouTube and watch Ashita Kim do sentry removal techniques. And yes, it's out there. You can watch Ashita Kim take out sentries just like a special forces operative. And there's even videos of Ashita Kim levitating, if you want to call it that. I mean, seriously, if you want to go take a look at that stuff, just be prepared to have some alcohol or other beverage of choice on your next to you, because it is pretty fucking hilarious. He also offered a $10,000 challenge to anybody who would fight him. There's so many hoops to jump through to get to this. It was just impossible to actually agree, but it's ridiculous. So, when you compare somebody like Ashita Kim to, say, people like the Gracie family, who actually put their money where their mouth is, and actually if you challenge them, they will call you out into a ring or an octagon and fight you, versus Ashita Kim, who will set up so many barriers that it's impossible to get through and has these bullshit videos out there of him doing absolutely nothing except living in fantasy land. You can see the difference between a real martial artist, a real martial arts practitioner, and somebody who lives his own little world. So Ashita Kim, although he's good for laughs, there are people who take him seriously. I don't know who, but just, we would call Ashita Kim, as I said, a Bullshido exponent. And a Bullshido is just a catch-all term for, Bushido is the Japanese term for martial arts. Budo, martial ways, Bushido, the way of the warrior. And so obviously Bullshido, you can see where that comes from. And Ashita Kim certainly is number one on the list of Bullshido experts. So, like I said, if you want a good laugh, go look up Ashita Kim on YouTube and watch his videos. They're pretty. He reminds me of a kid who just basically will not back down from a lie he's told, if you want to put it that way. It's just really remarkable. But that's an example of fraud in the martial arts. Someone who is expanding on a real thing that was out there, ninja, ninjutsu, shinobi, and legitimate schools that do exist. And now he's someone who just makes up these bullshit claims. And whether you believe him or not is up to you, of course, but I just find the evidence highly, highly doubtful. So let's move on from Ishita Kim to George Dillman. George Dillman, like our old friend Count Dante, is a legitimate martial artist. I mean, he does have legitimate background in legitimate martial arts. For a number of years, he ran the Northeast Karate Championships, and he actually had training seminars where Muhammad Ali used to train. So, I mean, he does, like Count Dante, I mean, he does actually have a background in legitimate martial arts. Where, of course, he went off the rails, I don't know. But at some point, he decided that he was going to teach what he called pressure point techniques. And I believe he calls this, let me see if I can find it. Anyway, Ryukyu Kenpo Tomari Te. Ryukyu is, the Ryukyu Island chain is an island chain to the south of the main Japanese islands. It's where Okinawa is found, the birthplace of karate. Kenpo is a form of martial arts. And Tomari, I'm not sure what the hell that is. Te is the Japanese word for hand. So Ryukyu Kenpo Tomari Te, Ryukyu Kenpo something hand. Well, anyway, he defines it as pressure point knockouts. Now, to understand how pressure point knockouts supposedly work, there's schools of thought in Chinese medicine, which claim that you can touch or hit a person at a sensitive spot and that person will become unconscious or die or basically be rendered immobile. Now, of course, it goes without saying there are pressure points on the body. Certainly, if you're a male, there are points in your life where you, unfortunately, myself included, have been kicked in the groin area. And I promise you that will knock you out or put you on the ground. It's not something I recommend. Obviously, of course, it's been known to sentries and spies and saboteurs for centuries that, of course, if you hit the person's neck, that will stop their breathing, interfere with their breathing, possibly kill them or knock them out. If you clap a person on the ears, obviously it will have very horrific effects. I mean, there are certain points in the human body that can knock a person out with relatively little pressure and energy. But those are pretty well known to anybody who has a basic knowledge of human anatomy, and certainly they can be very, very easily taught. The idea of pressure points is something which is that there's certain point parts of the day or certain areas of the human body where blood flows, or what some Chinese practitioners call qi or life energy flows. And you can interrupt this qi at a certain point and knock the person out. Now, there is no scientific basis behind this. It's just based on hearsay. It's based on third-party anecdotes, what have you. There's no direct evidence that this stuff actually exists. But that doesn't stop people like George Dillman from teaching this sort of thing. And if you can see some of George Dillman's seminars or parts of his seminars online, and he shows where apparently he's knocking somebody out just by touching, or sometimes not even touching them. And it's bizarre, let's put it that way. Some of this, quite frankly, I think is a direct result of art imitating life, or life imitating art, however you want to look at that. Where, if you remember, of course, Star Wars, you have the Force, and Luke Skywalker manipulates the Force, beginning with, Star Wars, I guess, but with The Empire Strikes Back, certainly, when he lifts the X-Wing up out of the mud, or when he does all sorts of things. And of course, there's the movies that follow, the Star Wars movies that follow, where Count Dooku and Yoda, when they're fighting, or when Anakin are fighting, they're throwing the Force around and just knocking each other out or throwing things around. So anyway, I sometimes wonder if this is how these ideas came about. Anyway, that's just speculation on my part. But anyway, George Dillman claims that he can use no-touch pressure point fighting, or pressure point fighting, maybe light-touch pressure point fighting, where you can knock somebody out. The idea being that you can, somebody can be across the room and you can use your chi energy and knock them out, or you can touch their elbow and knock them out, what have you. I'm just, of course, extrapolating here from his own the videos he's shown. It goes without saying, of course, I don't believe this at all. I don't think there's any evidence for this. I don't believe it's out there. And the problem with this sort of thing is it gives people a false sense of security. One of the reasons, and I mentioned this in my last episode, if people study martial arts or self-defense techniques, is because you want to learn how to defend yourself. You're not just learning a form of exercise. You're not just learning a way to keep yourself in shape. You're not just learning flexibility exercises. You're learning supposedly how to defend yourself, you know, in a situation where you really need to know how to defend yourself. And if you're presented with a bunch of bullshit, which claims that if you touch a person here or there at a certain time of day, it'll knock him out, and there's no scientific or realistic basis behind this, well, you're in for a bad surprise. As I said, I'm an attorney. I'm a criminal defense attorney. It's one of my areas of specialty, white collar crime, of course. And certainly some of the people that are out there, dangerous people, they will not be impressed if you wave a hand and think they're going to go down, because I promise you, they will not. So it's not just a question that you may be wasting time, or it's not just a question that you may be just, you know, living in fantasy land. It's a question that you're a person who's learning this. Can be engaged in self-delusion, and the person teaching this is engaged in fraud. I mean, quite frankly, I think it is a form of fraud, and serious fraud, if you're teaching something which you know or should know has absolutely no legitimate martial or self-defense value, and you're telling people this will work, and it doesn't work. And you know, it's not just a question that you're teaching somebody how to punch and they punch wrong. I mean, that's just anatomy. We're talking here about a complete or supposedly complete system of self-defense, which is based on the idea that there's this invisible energy around us. Yes, the force, call it that, or chi, whatever. And you can manipulate this chi and you can use it to defend yourself. Well, it has, of course, a very high idealistic value. I mean, it's nice to, if it existed, it would be nice to be able to defend yourself and not hurt the other person, or learn how to defend yourself without expending any real physical energy on your part. But it doesn't work that way. Life doesn't work that way. And certainly self-defense situations don't work that way. And it can be extremely dangerous to the person trying to apply this when they think they're actually doing something and they're not. And quite frankly, seeing people dance around waving their hands at each other and think that somehow this is going to result in some sort of the person being across the way being injured or getting them off your back. As I said, it creates a false sense of security and a very real problem. There was a video that was put out a few years ago. It's still on the web. There's a lot of videos actually like this, but I thought this one was the most interesting. This is back in the early 2000s. There was a Japanese practitioner of this kind of nonsense who claimed he could do this and, you know, he's willing to put his money where his mouth is. Well, some Japanese MMA fighters took him up on it and brought him into a ring, and within a couple of maybe 30 seconds, the so-called no-touch master was on the floor writhing in pain as he got the crap kicked out of him by a real martial arts practitioner. And that's what would happen if somebody tried this crap on the street. They would be, at the very least, hurt, at the very worst, seriously hurt, possibly even killed. So I find this fraud to be unacceptable. And yes, it is a form of fraud. If you can show under controlled scientific conditions that this chi exists, you know, go for it. I mean, there's very easy ways to try and prove it. What's interesting is the people who have tried to prove it, not only the Japanese guy I mentioned, but also there is a guy in China who's famous for this sort of thing, where he's a Chinese MMA practitioner who will go around to people who claim they have this chi power and challenge them. And some of the people, these chi practitioners, will get into the ring with this person and, of course, get beaten up. I guess it's interesting that at least these chi practitioners are willing to put their money where their mouth is and, you know, see what happens. But that doesn't excuse the fact that there's still no real evidence of this. So once again, caveat emptor, buyer beware. If you're going to a martial arts school which claims that they can teach you how to do this magic stuff, well, I'd just be very skeptical. So we've talked about Ishida Kim and we've talked about George Dillman. Let's move on to the third person we're going to talk about today, Frank Dukes. That's D-U-X. And once again, going back to the 80s, hey, look, I grew up in the 80s, okay, so give me a break. It was a great time to grow up. We had the best music, the best movies. We were the ones that developed your... No, I could go on and on, never mind. Anyway, growing up in the 80s, as I said, ninjutsu was everywhere, but it was also the time when a young Belgian actor was starting off in his career. I am, of course, talking about Jean-Claude Van Damme, the muscles from Brussels. It's hard to believe, but in the 80s and 90s, that guy was everywhere. And he was famous for being able to do the complete splits and do these amazing kicks. And he's a legitimate martial artist, by the way. But anyway, I think it was 87 or 88, I can't remember. But anyway, Jean-Claude Van Damme starred in this movie called Bloodsport. Now, this is before the Ultimate Fighting Championship. This is before we had mass exposure to mixed martial arts. Now, as I said in my last podcast, mixed martial arts have been around for thousands of years, certainly since the time of the ancient Greeks. They called it pancration back then. But anyway, Bloodsport was the story, and Jean-Claude Van Damme played a man named Frank Dukes, who claimed that he had been involved in an underground fighting championship where no holds barred. Now, of course, today we call it MMA, so it's no big deal. But like I said, you've got to go back to the 80s. And this Frank Dukes' story was actually made into this movie where it's been a while since I've seen the movie, but I seem to remember Frank Dukes being played by Jean-Claude Van Damme. He went to, I guess in Hong Kong, the Kowloon Walled City, which no longer exists, and had the secret underground tournament where he fought person after person with various different fighting styles. And eventually Frank Dukes won. And supposedly this is based on the true story of Frank Dukes, who went in this secret underground tournament. I'm not sure if this secret underground tournament Frank Dukes claimed he was in Hong Kong, but anyway. Anyway, it's a bunch of bullshit. No, there was no secret underground fighting tournament that Frank Dukes was in that anybody can verifiably prove. And the terms they use in this underground tournament, for example, kumite. Kumite is simply the Japanese word for fighting. If you take a karate class, you'll find your class is divided into two parts, kata, which are prearranged forms, and kumite, which is free sparring. So the idea that there's a fighting, secret underground fighting place called kumite, you know, what about other practitioners of other martial arts? Would they call it kumite too? That doesn't make any sense. And then moving on to this bullshit of Frank Dukes, this is where the story really gets kind of funny. Supposedly, Frank Dukes was trained by a guy named Senzo Tiger Tanaka. Tiger Tanaka. Now, I'm not really a big fan of James Bond, but if you watch one of the last James Bond movies in which Sean Connery starred, You Only Live Twice, it takes place in Japan. And Sean Connery goes to Japan, and he's trained by an elite group of ninjas run by the person who runs this elite group of ninjas is none other than a guy named Tiger Tanaka. And apparently this is also the character Tiger Tanaka that was used in Ian Fleming's original novel of the same name. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, make this crap up. It's another thing when you're too lazy to even make crap up from your own mind. Instead, you have to use secondary sources. So, yeah, what do you say to something like that? You know, I mean, by the way, I thought You Only Live Twice was kind of a good movie, but if you look at it from today's standards, it's incredibly sexist and racist, but I digress. But anyway, it's just ridiculous that you have this ninjutsu sensei named Tiger Tanaka who trains this guy. And so it's bizarre. It's completely bizarre. But as they say on late night TV, wait, folks, there's more. Stay tuned. Well, Frank Dukes also published a novel. I mean, it was actually published. I don't know who actually published it. But he published a novel called The Secret Man. And in this novel, Frank Dukes claims that, of course, he worked for what else? The CIA. And he had all these adventures with the CIA and did all this other, you know, amazing stuff, James Bond wannabe. And look, a friend of mine who actually did work for the CIA for a number of years. He was a field officer. He said something which, of course, is very true. You can't disprove that somebody worked for the CIA. I mean, you can't prove a negative. But it's sort of like Santa Claus. Eventually, you know, I can't disprove there's no Santa Claus either. But eventually, you have so many fantastic stories built on fantastic stories that it just becomes absolutely ridiculous. And people who have been in the CIA and other people who have read this so-called book call it virtually a complete fabrication. And there are some even magazines such as Soldier of Fortune, which is hardly what I would, well, okay, it's a decent publication, Soldier of Fortune. But even they said there were logical inconsistencies in the book. Like, for example, that the director of the CIA at the time, William J. Casey, personally handled in Frank Dukes' operations, and no one else would know they would exist. I mean, come on. This is just absolutely ridiculous. So, yes, in addition to this just other complete nonsense that we have to put up with, there is this fantasy that he worked for the CIA. I mean, yeah, it just gets to the point where it's, how much crack can you smoke in a day? Now, one thing that really, really pisses me off, though, about Frank Dukes is that he claims he has been was given the Medal of Honor. The Medal of Honor is one of the highest, if not the highest, award that is given to military personnel. Now, if you're going to fly about getting a military honor, a military award, I don't recommend lying that you got the military of honor, that you got the Medal of Honor, because it's pretty easy to check if you see you've been awarded the Medal of Honor. As I said, it's one of the highest, if not the highest, award that can be given to a member of the U.S. military. And anyway, and that really pisses me off. I hate stolen valor. I never served in the armed forces, but I hate it when somebody claims they served in the armed forces when they didn't, or they're claiming that they were won some military award that they didn't. It's just preposterous, and it's insulting to the real men and women who actually did serve in the armed forces or won medals, won these high awards. So, Frank Dukes apparently did serve in the military, but the idea that he won the Medal of Honor is just absolutely preposterous. So that completes our round of bullshito for today, examining three complete frauds in the martial arts: Ashita Kim, aka Radford Davis, George Dillman, who claims that he's the master Yoda of the martial arts world, and Frank Dukes, who is a liar and a fraud in many ways. And it's just very unfortunate. So as I said, the real harm with fraud in the martial arts is that people learn or go to these schools to learn actual self-defense techniques, or if you're into sports, real sporting techniques. And the idea that you're going to actually learn this, learn how to defend yourself with techniques that don't work and really harm people in the end, it's fraud. And not only, like I said, are you wasting your time and wasting your money — some martial arts schools are very expensive — but you're given a false sense of security, which can really harm a person in the end. So what to look for in a martial arts school then? I like to give advice sometimes in my podcast, what to look for if you're interested in studying martial arts. Well, the first thing, in my opinion, is define what you want to learn. I teach historical fencing, and every so often I have somebody come to my school and ask, they want to learn historical fencing because they think it will improve their Taekwondo game or their Jiu-Jitsu game. And I mean, in an oblique way or indirect way, it will, but it's not the primary focus of what we do. So you need to know what you want to learn. Like I said, if you want to learn striking techniques, you're going to go to a karate school or Taekwondo school. If you want to learn grappling, you'll go to a Jiu-Jitsu school or Samba school. Just first know what you want to learn. And if somebody says they can teach you everything, I would be skeptical. Let's put it that way. Look for clean facilities. The facilities should be clean. Now, a lot of times schools will rent out spaces from other schools, but that doesn't, or places that are like gyms that are for rent, that sort of thing. And that's fine, but they should be they should be clean and well-run as well. The instructor, obviously the instructor is the most important part of any school. I would be aware of instructors who claim that the world champions in something and have no actual authenticity to back it up. Nowadays, you can claim you're a world champion in just about anything, but thanks to the internet, you can also verify those claims. If somebody claims that they're a world champion, say in jiu-jitsu, well, Google their name. Does it pop up? If somebody claims they have a background in a certain type of school or a certain type of style, well, that should be verifiable as well. I would also watch out for schools that give black belts out to 10 or 11-year-olds or even younger. The whole concept of a black belt is something that's worth talking about. Not in my podcast because that's not the focus, but certainly in a podcast in general for those that focus on martial arts. But to claim that an 11-year-old or 10-year-old has reached that status is just absolute absurdity. A kid does not have the emotional or physical capabilities at that age. I don't care how talented they are. And it's ridiculous to claim at that age that you should be awarded that kind of rank. And if somebody disagrees with me, well, I'm happy to debate them, but I just think it's absolutely absurd. Likewise, watch out for programs that will say, pay us $5,000 up front, we'll guarantee a black belt in 24, 36 months, what have you. Martial arts, first of all, are a journey, not an end, number one. And number two, to claim that within a certain amount of time you will reach a skill level is also absolutely absurd. Some people will pick up things faster. People will pick up things slower. But in any case, it requires a commitment of time and energy that not everyone will be able to make. And even those that put in a great deal of time and energy, there's no timetable as to when this should be done. So just be aware of those kind of programs. Also, be careful of contracts. But as people know me, I'm Mr. Libertarian. Everybody has the right to earn a living. But beware of contracts that lock you in for 1, 2, or 3 years. Those are binding contracts. And if you say you're going to join a school and sign a contract for a year, you're responsible for those payments for a year, whether or not you attend classes or not. I'm not saying all contracts are bad, but certainly you should be aware that if you're going to sign a long-term contract, you need to know what you're getting yourself into and the penalties as to what happens if you break that contract. Contract is very much a part of law. And if you're signing a contract where you agreed to pay $100 a month for 12 months, be aware you're responsible for that $1,200, to pay that $1,200. Also be aware that some contracts are just for tuition only. They do not include testing fees, fees for mandatory tournaments, that sort of thing. So once again, be careful of what you're signing. Take a look at the students, see how they work. Are they motivated? Are they happy to be there? Or are they just lackluster? Also, take a look at the students who you want to hang around. Is the school mainly for small kids? Is the school mainly for teenagers? Is everybody there? You need to be very, very aware of what's going on there. And finally, once again, just martial arts are a form of exercise. Before you start any martial arts program, just like you would start any form of exercise, talk to your doctor. Make sure that you're getting into a program that's right for you. Some martial arts are incredible calorie burnout, like Taekwondo or Jiu-Jitsu. Others like Tai Chi are not. And you need to make sure that you have the physical capability to do these things before you get involved. Anyway, that is my program for today, part 2 of 2 of Fraud in the Martial Arts. I certainly hope you enjoyed it. I'm not sure what we'll talk about during the next episode, but as I say, I'm sure we'll think of something. And if you live in Texas like me, man, it is hot outside. We need some rain. Everybody have a good week. Take care.